The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, we have a lot of information, three or four guests. Some of you will be able to hear us over the Progressive Radio Network, over the Internet, some over your land-based stations, some for 1 hour and some for two or three. But I'm going to have in this hour, my guest is going to be talking about preserving the Clean Air Act and the EPA against the supporters of private coal and fossil fuel industries that are trying to simply do to our energy what they did to our financing. When they got rid of the Glass-Steagall Act, that's how we ended up with casino capitalism. By getting rid of the EPA's Clean Air Act, which Ralph Nader was responsible for, that means that they could pollute all they wanted with no consequences. What would that mean as far as global warming? It would mean we would have no real opportunity to stop global warming. Jim Pugh, an attorney for the organization Earth Justice in Washington, will be here to talk about that. Now, later in the day, I'm going to be speaking with a man who was behind the UN effort to save some Rwandans from genocide. And that's not what he's going to talk about today. I'm going to be filming on that because I'm doing a special documentary on that. But we are going to talk about, we're going to talk about all these children around the world, and in Africa in particular, who have become little soldiers, and what acts they commit. And then how do those people reintegrate back into life? It'll be an interesting conversation by someone who was there and has worked tirelessly to help in that. We're going to talk about spy drones becoming pervasive inside the United States, Monsanto's man in the Obama administration. We're also going to talk about Home of the Barricaded and Land of the Frayed by David Michael Green, things that are going on the average person just doesn't know about our global and national security state. We're also going to have a commentary from Chris Hedges. And as many of you know, when I open the lines and ask people to respond, whatever they say, there's no censorship, no gag order, they say what they want. And so Chris Hedges is coming to the defense of Cornel West. It's a short commentary, but we're going to share it with you on our program since we were the ones who led off on actually defending Cornel West. We have a lot to share with you. Always the latest on health and healing. Let's begin. For those of you doing yoga, you're doing a good thing for yourself because it can help ward off allergies. Now, this is from the American Academy of Asthma, Allergy, and Immunology. As the summer comes on, and many of you around the United States now, in the Rockies, especially in the Northeast, in New Jersey, Connecticut, and New York and Pennsylvania, you're really feeling allergies now. And it's only going to get worse in through July. Well, the aches, the pains, the itching, the fatigue, the sneezing, because it's heat and humidity in the air. And now there's a way of using yoga that can change this. Now, we all know the way that it works. You get hay fever, which occurs in the inner walls of your nose. They get swollen because of something you have inhaled, and that further releases what are called histamines, and histamines are responsible for your puffy eyes and runny nose. And good news, yoga can help all that. That's correct, because when you suffer from allergies, and you've heard me mention this many times, your immune system is weakened. And when you have a weakened immune system, you become agitated and stressed. So by relaxing with yoga. You're helping fight your body's flight or fight response. Hence, you're bringing down your cortisol to normal, that flight or fight hormone, and that helps you ward off allergies. And so it was studied, and it was shown to work. So yoga for allergies. Next up, I'm glad mainstream science is finally reporting on this, because this is something that has been dealt with by behavioralists for a long time. Here's Science Daily, and this is from the Psychological Science, a journal of the American Association of Psychological Science. Quote, having less power impairs your mind and hence impairs your ability to get ahead. That's right. In this article, a random university professor and colleagues at the Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern University took a look at all this and found that focus on a set of cognitive processes called executive functions. And executive functions help people maintain and pursue their goals in difficult and distracting situations. And the researchers found that lacking power impaired people's ability to keep track of ever-changing information and to parse out irrelevant information and to successfully plan ahead to achieve their goals. Now, in lay language, what does this mean? I'll give you a very good example. I was approached by a couple, now retired, recently in the last few months, retired New York City police officers from Brooklyn, Bed-Stuy, and they realized that they wanted a better quality of life for them and their son, and they also realized that we're not paying attention to all of the red flags about global warming, climate change, and even these flares, which, by the way, tomorrow I'm going to have Larry Joseph on talking about atmospheric science, the effects of the solar and astronomical events and conditions upon the Earth and upon human technology. And I'll be talking about the recent NASA report and those solar flares and the depletion of some of the planet's electromagnetic fields and other phenomena coming our way. Is it bad? It's real bad. Aren't we paying attention to it? Not at all. And the question is why? Something worse than anything we've ever been dealt with. If you put 100 Katrinas, 1,000 Katrinas together, you couldn't deal with what's coming. And yet, you wouldn't think anything's coming. Well, it is. And I'm going to deal with it tomorrow. Make sure you tune in tomorrow or download the program. Now, so this couple says, okay, we want to prepare ourselves, but you've got all kinds of problems standing in your way. And those problems become distractions. And all I said to them was, master what you focus on and don't allow any distractions. All right, what does that mean? Well, in her case, the wife's case, she wanted to have a whole line of organic, dairy-free, gluten-free, sugar-free desserts because she feels that people will always have a sweet tooth, but why not give them something that's actually healthy, raw foods, etc. Great idea. And then she spent the next, while she was still a police officer, she spent the next 12 months in her time at night and on the weekends mastering that. And every time she'd come by to my office, I'd try something and then I'd give her feedback and then she would go back and she would correct it. Till now, she's perfected that. Now the next step is, all right, where do you do this if you're not going to do it in the city? Well, you do it in the country. How do you get to the country? What parts of the country? What are good parts, bad parts? What are parts that are open to having people do their own home-based business, which are would be antagonistic? Where are the more progressive groups of people living? So at least you know that people around you are something of a like mind, where you can barter and exchange. And so then that became keeping the focus on where you want to be in a year or 2 years from now. Because I figure we've got about maximum 2 years before we start seeing some really substantial problems. Look, yesterday you had a tornado that killed 89 people. They who had never in the history of the state had 89 people killed, but it happened yesterday. But then a month ago we had more than that killed in Kentucky and Alabama. But they had never had that before. Now, the never had it before becomes the new norm. And then we're going to have the most very high level of Category 3, 4, and 5 hurricanes this summer, the most in Americans' history. Why this year? Why these tornadoes this year? Why the hottest summer on record last year? Why the coldest winter on record this year? Why the most rain? Because we're at the tipping point. Now, people in the media just don't seem to be able to put any of this together. But if you connect the dots and pull back, you'll see that all of this is what I call the tippings. I've been working for a long time on a documentary. That's where I'm at even today. On the tipping points. Four of the 12 tipping points will tip no matter what we do, and it will be devastating. The other eight we can interfere with and lessen the impact. We're acting as if there are no tipping points. These are all irrelevant. And let's get back to who won on The Apprentice. We have made the irrelevant the only relevance because it's our distraction. Why? Because we lack power. And when we lack power, we cannot focus upon a goal that's important and keeping discipline and focus. So if you lack power, no matter what you're doing, your goal is not going to be achieved. And the goal that you should be achieving, which gets you beyond the point of disempowerment and gets you power back, you're not paying attention to. So having less power means your mind is impaired. And then what you'll do, you'll look for comfort in things that can distract you. Food, sports, going to movies, gossip, whatever it is. And that's where most people have their minds. So when you talk with a person to try to have a reasonable conversation about what's going on in the world, they just can't bring their mind around to it. Why? Not that they're stupid. They're not. Not that they have been dumbed down to where they have no understanding of these things. They do. But they're in such pain spiritually because they don't feel they have the power. Just look at what our government. Our government is now to be feared because it is a danger to our rights and freedoms. We break all treaties. We do anything we want. We want to assassinate people. Anyone who has a modicum of understanding would know that there was the kill order on Osama bin Laden before that mission started. Why? What did we fear finding out that could have embarrassed us had we put Osama bin Laden on trial? Oh, we shouldn't have put him on trial? Why did we put all the war criminals who did far worse? Think of the people who killed all the Jews and all the other people in the Second World War. 40 million people dead. That's a big bad. We put him on trial because we wanted the truth to come out, and we got our truth, and they got their punishment. At the end of the day, justice will be served. It's not served when you usurped it. But we do all this now. So now people feel, I can't get a break. Every time I turn around, I see another report where people are making billions on Wall Street, failed and bankrupt institutions are being bailed out. They won't help me with my little business. They won't help me with this, my mortgage. I'm about to lose my home. That's what's going on in people's minds. Every time I turn around, my kid is saying, I can't pay my interest on my loans. I'm getting 25 calls a week from these collection agencies. They're harassing me. It's causing me to be stressed out. People are saying, I got to live off my credit cards. I have to kite my cards. I have to pay one bill with another bill and then pay that credit card with another credit card. And the moment you're late, they can charge you astronomical interest. The very banks that we bailed out are now crippling Americans. Yeah, there's no shortage of reasons for people to feel disempowered. Only the mighty, only the powerful, living in this illusion that they're smarter. They're not. I've counseled some of the smartest people in the world, and I've counseled some of the most powerful people in the world, and they've never been the same people. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment. Please stay with us. Da 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 Nice to have you with us today. Last week we challenged the idea of a listener who said that, you know, Obama should be given more time, that he's made a lot of good progress, and that he's certainly not a George Bush, and anybody's better than a Republican. And look at the, you know, look at the Clinton, and then look at Obama, and look at all the good, and that these are not people that have engaged in the kind of the murders or the death of a George Bush. Yeah. I don't know what history book you're reading. Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton and Madeleine Albright and the head of the UN caused the death of 900,000 people in Rwanda in 90 days. They refused to acknowledge this genocide. They interceded every single opportunity to stop it from happening in the first place and give safe passage, France did, but with our understanding, as did England, of those who were perpetrating the crimes. Then you got 500,000 children who died from the sanctions during Clinton's administration. Well, add those two numbers together, and you're over 1,400,000 dead people who didn't have to die. Take no responsibility for that? Well, that's typical. The liberal class, which attempted last week to discredit the words of Cornel West, spoke about Barack Obama and the Democratic Party. Prefers comfort and privilege to justice, truth, and confrontation. Its guiding ideology stance is determined by what is most expedient in the careers of its members. It refuses to challenge in a meaningful way the decaying structures of democracy or the ascendancy of the corporate state. It glosses over the relentless assault on workers, men and women, and the imperial wars that are bankrupting the nation. It proclaims its adherence to traditional liberal values while defending and promoting systems of power that mock these same values. The pillars of the liberal establishment, the press, the church, the culture, the university, the labor, and the Democratic Party all honor an unwritten quid pro quo with corporations and the power elite, as well as our masters of war, on whom they depend for money, access, and positions of influence. Those who expose this moral cowardice and collaboration with corporate power are always ruthlessly thrust aside. The capitulation of the liberal class to corporate capitalism, as Irving Howe once noted, has, quote, bleached out all political tendencies. The liberal class has become, as Howe wrote, a loose shelter, a poncho rather than a program. To call oneself a liberal, one doesn't really have to believe in anything. The decision to subordinate ethics to political expediency has led liberals to steadily surrender their moral autonomy, voice, and beliefs to the dictates of the corporate state. As Dwight MacDonald wrote in The Root is Man, those who do not make human beings the center of their concern soon lose the capacity to make any ethical choices, for they willingly sacrifice others in the name of the politically expedient and practical. By extolling the powers of the state as an agent of change, as well as measuring human progress through the advances of science and technology and consumption, liberals abetted the cult of the self and the ascendancy of the corporate state. The liberal class placed its faith in the inevitability of human progress and abandoned the human values that should have remained at the core of its activism. The state, now the repository of the hopes and dreams of the liberal class, should always have been seen as the enemy. The destruction of the old radical militant movements, the communists, socialists, and anarchists, has left liberals without a source of new ideas. The link between an effective liberal class and a more radical left was always essential to the health of the former. The liberal class, by allowing radical movements to be dismembered through red baiting and by banishing those within its ranks who had moral autonomy, gradually deformed basic liberal tenets to support unfettered capitalism, the national security state, globalization, and permanent war. Liberalism, cut off from the radical roots of creative and bold thought, merged completely with the corporate power elite. The liberal class at once was betrayed and betrayed itself, and it now functions like a commercial brand, giving a different flavor, a face, or a spin to the ruthless mechanisms of corporate power. This, indeed, is the primary function of Barack Obama. The liberal class, despite becoming an object of widespread public scorn, prefers the choreographed charade. It will decry the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan or call for the universal health care, but continue to defend and support a Democratic Party that has no intention of disrupting the corporate machine. As long as the charade is played, the liberal class can hold itself up as the conscience of the nation without actually doing anything to act on it. It can maintain its privileged economic status. It can continue to live in an imaginary world where democratic reform and responsible government exist. It can pretend it has a voice and influence in the quarters of power. But the uselessness and irrelevance of the liberal class are not lost on the tens of millions of Americans who suffer the indignities of corporate state. And this is why liberals are rightly despised by the world working class and all the poor. The liberal class is incapable of reforming itself. It does not hold within its ranks the rebels and iconoclasts who have the moral or physical courage to defy the corporate state and power elite. And when someone such as Cornel West speaks out, packs of career liberals, or perhaps one should call them neoliberals, descend on the apostate like hellhounds, never addressing the truths that are expressed, but instead engaging in vicious character assassination. The same thing happened to Ralph Nader, Noam Chomsky, Dennis Kucinich, Jeremiah Wright, and others who defied the political orthodoxy of corporate capitalism. The corporate forces which have taken control of the press and which break unions, run the universities, fund the arts, and own the Democratic Party demand banishment of all who question the good intentions of the powerful. Liberals who comply are tolerated within the system. They are permitted to busy themselves with the boutique activism of political correctness, inclusiveness, and multiculturalism. If they attempt to fight for the primacy of justice, they become pariahs. Leo Tolstoy, who I mentioned a few weeks ago in a commentary, wrote that there were three characteristics of all forms of prophecy. First, it is entirely opposed to the general ideas of the people in the midst of whom it is uttered. Secondly, all who hear it feel its truth. And thirdly, above all, it urges men to realize what it foretells. In conclusion, prophets put forward during their day ideas that the mass people, including the elite, denounce as impractical, and yet in the same time sense to be true. This is what invokes the rage against the prophet. He or she states the obvious in a society where the obvious is seditious. Prophecy is feared because of the consequences of the truth. To accept that Obama is, as West said, a mascot for Wall Street means having to challenge some frightening monoliths of power and give up the comfortable illusion of the Democratic Party or the liberal institutions can be instruments for genuine reform. It means having to step outside the mainstream. It means a new radicalism. It means recognizing that there is no hope for a correction or a reversal within the forms of system of power we have. It means defying traditional systems of power, and liberals who have become courtiers to the corporate state must attempt to silence all those others who condemn the ruthlessness and mendacity of these systems of destruction. Their denunciation of all who rebel is a matter of self-preservation. For once the callous heart of the corporate state is exposed, so is the callous heart of the liberal class. I'm Gary Nall, and that is a letter from Chris Hedges. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, back into our studio in New York City. We have Elizabeth standing by to read some of your mail, and she selects from all that are sent the ones she feels that would impact most people. I don't know what they are. I'll hear as you hear. And also we have one of our newsmakers calling in, Dr. Howard Robbins, because anytime someone is doing healing work that's making a difference, I want people to know about it. If what Howard Robbins and others I know were... If they were to do this with a drug, the world would know about it. When they do it without the medication and do it using more natural and non-toxic ways, but get better results than anyone using a drug, we never hear about it. So whenever Howard, I'm told, is on the phone, I like to go and see what he's up to. Hi, Howard.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Doing great.
Thanks, Howard,
what's up?
Okay, well, you know, we do something that could also be thought of as an illusion by some people, intravenous ozone therapy, and does it really work? And we could say how well it works and all the different things, the herpes, the AIDS, the hepatitis B and C, the diabetic ulcers and gangrenous ulcers, and all the things that it fixes. But what we try to do is bring on patients of ours, because the patients are telling you this isn't an illusion. This is true. This stuff really works and it's safe. And we have a patient on right now.
What's the patient's name?
Chen.
Chen. Hi, Chen.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Good. What condition did you have, or do you have?
Well, I was diagnosed about 3 years ago with multiple sclerosis, and I went many years undiagnosed. My primary symptoms were weakness and loss of strength. I didn't have any mental clarity. I had a lot of sensations of feeling dizzy, like I was going to fall over. And after about 2 years of a combination of being on your protocol and intravenous ozone and chelation, 2 years later I had a diagnosis reversal, and that's just fantastic. I feel fantastic. I feel better than I've ever felt in my whole life. I'm in the process of changing careers from one career that was toxic to something else that's non-toxic, and life is good, as my daughter would say.
Okay, I'm sure as many patients who have neuromuscular or any form of Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, that you do your homework. You see what the prognosis is. Based upon your original neurologist, your original diagnosis and treatment, what was their prognosis for your future?
Well, at that time, they didn't have anything that in my future to be foreseen in the long term. In the short term, as soon as I had the diagnosis, the first step was to get me to a multiple sclerosis center in northern New Jersey and get me on medications right away.
Okay, but
that was their only plan.
Okay. Their idea was to slow down its progression. That's the whole treatment.
Well, the idea is that there's no cure for it, so in lieu of not having a cure for it, we're just going to make you as comfortable as possible.
All right, and I'm sure you've met other people in the support groups that you've been in through your Orthodox multiple sclerosis centers who have that. Now, looking at this information today, are you aware of any other person anywhere who has completely been cured of multiple sclerosis?
Negative.
Okay, you have not. So as we speak, unless we're told otherwise or shown otherwise, you're the only person that we're aware of right now in the United States who can say that they had multiple sclerosis and all of its symptoms, were put on an Orthodox treatment, did not stay on that, got on a holistic protocol, and today you have no multiple sclerosis by medical diagnosis and neurological scans and MRIs, et cetera, from your neurologist. You're completely cured. Is that what you're saying?
All of that is true, and yes, that is what I'm saying.
Okay. I wanted people to hear that. So, once again, if any drug cured a person with multiple sclerosis, I can promise you tomorrow that would be every headline in the United States. All right?
Gary, can I say one thing about it, though? Because there's a few people that I've talked to who wanted to, you know, go through the protocol and, you know, get a IV ozone to treat their multiple sclerosis, and one common thing that I hear that, you know, I really want people to understand, people get caught up in symptoms, and they always ask me, what were your symptoms, or what did you go through? And if it doesn't match what their symptoms were completely, then the question always comes up, well, how do I know if it's going to work for me, if, you know, just because we have different symptoms, you know what I'm saying?
Sure, I know what you're saying. But remember, no two diseases manifest identical in two patients. Breast cancer, heart disease, Alzheimer's. Each person has their own unique biochemical individuality, and they're going to have different symptoms. But they have a general condition. It is progressing. It is not reversible. And you reversed it. And one part of that therapy was ozone. The other part was a protocol I created for you. But it was you using it 2 years that caused this reversal. now you have the medical documentation, the original documentation, all the times you went to the physician as proof. So watch whether or not people show interest or whether they show disdain. It's interesting, the more successful you become at reversing a disease in the alternative therapy, the more you become a point of attack. Because if you're right, think of all the people who are suffering and don't need to. Think of all the people who are getting therapy that's expensive with side effects. Think of all the lost hope because, well, gee whiz, no one else has reversed it, so I can I. And if you remember back, I did a lecture. I don't know if you were at it or not. And it was only for people with neurological imbalance. I said, you've all been told that you cannot reverse your conditions because no one has. But remember Bannister. He was told nobody could break the four-minute mile. All the experts in the world said in body mechanics and athletics says nobody can break a four-minute mile. He did a 358 mile. He did it very, very shortly after a whole bunch of other athletes did it. What were they all waiting for? Proof that someone can do it. You're now proof that someone can reverse multiple sclerosis. Thanks a lot for being on. And Howard, thanks for helping with the patients, with the ozone on your end. Give people your number if anyone has questions about the therapy.
Okay, if anybody has a problem, a medical problem that you don't think you can fix, that you're stuck with, don't believe them. Give us a call, 212-581-0101. That's 212-581-0101.
One other thing, Howard, before you go, just for some of the people in this audience who may not be aware of it, how many people decided to be on the accelerated anti-AIDS protocol, all who had advanced AIDS and ARC, when they came to the Tri-State Healing Center? How many people volunteered to be on that protocol, which required them to be in the office getting all forms of therapy 6 days a week, 4 hours a day?
Oh, my God. We had well over 100, almost 150, 200 people.
How many? We had, well, there was 1,200 who were being treated any given time for AIDS.
That's right.
But of those, 12 people went the full route of a year and a half. How many of those people reversed their AIDS completely?
Every single one.
How many went from HIV positive to HIV negative?
Well, actually, that's amazing because they say it can't be done, but we zero-converted all of them.
All of them, and we had the medical documentation, and it was Tony Brown who brought us on PBS with each one of those people with their medical records after he had his own physician first independently verify that. And every day of the week, people could come in there from any walk of life, physicians, scientists, journalists, and speak with the people who are being treated. Never was an article written, not one article in the entire time that over 2,800 people were treated because I believe of what Fritz Perl said, the father of Gestalt, a fear of knowing is a fear of doing. If you acknowledge someone's doing something that no one else can do, then you can no longer put the lie out there and say, well, it can't be done. So they simply avoided it. But that's the reality. Thanks a lot, Howard Robbins. Give your number time, Howard, for people who didn't write it down. Okay, let's go over and say hello to Elizabeth in the studio. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello, Gary. Hi. We have a lot of things here in the studio. First of all, though, Obama made a speech about Israel the other day, and then he made just the opposite speech yesterday. And now he's in Ireland and he's on his world tour, his week's tour of Europe, and he's saying that the Irish are great people, but he seems to have said nothing that should have been said. All this time the left are continuing to side with Obama. But what's the real message that it should be coming from Obama or is coming from Obama related to Ireland and the Arab world and Europe at this time, in your opinion?
All right, well, when Obama said that we should go back to the 67, or Israel should go back to the 67 boundaries, that's just his opinion. It's not going to happen. Netanyahu and the right, Likud, are not going to allow that. And he didn't hold Israel accountable. In other words, we'll stop our military aid or any other aid. So it was a political statement to reaffirm his base. Not the progressives. The progressives are not supporting Obama. I don't know a single progressive anywhere that will support Obama. They're not that stupid. But the liberal base, yes, will support him. And the more poor, the more helpless, the more you like to hear what a man says, it's pure illusion. But knowing that him making a statement was for his base, because he turned right around yesterday and told the most powerful Jewish lobby in the world everything they wanted to hear. So on the one hand, he re-cemented his position with the Jewish power elite And on the other hand, he managed to do a double hat trick. He got many of his liberals saying, yeah, he wants peace there. Now, does he? At the same time, he's saying we want peace. We are also the number one seller of arms to the Middle East. We sell arms all over the world. We're number one in the world. We sell more than Russia and China combined. What do you think people do with arms? What do you think people do with landmines? How many legs get blown off every year from landmines? How many landmines did we put in Vietnam but never took back? How many did we put in Cambodia? Never took back. So it's easy to say something as long as you don't have to act on it. In Ireland yesterday, always said were the things that anyone from Ireland would like to hear. You're great people. You have a lot of strengths. All platitudes. What could he have said? He could have said, right now the bubble is deflating. You still have another 30 to 40% loss in the value of your real estate. You'll have the highest unemployment rate and the highest bankruptcy rate in your country's history in the next 2 years. However, you have a choice. You either continue to give all of your money to the International Monetary Fund back and other banks who got you into this problem, or you don't pay them any more money, go off the euro, and then save your own economy. Put people back to work. Don't fire any more teachers. Don't close down any more school programs or food subsidy programs for your senior citizens or free transportation for your senior citizens or some free hospitalization for senior citizens, all of which now you're going to have to do away with. So you're going to take people who are poor and you're going to make them destitute poor. He had a choice to say that. He chose not to. So people will finally see Obama for what he is. But as long as there's limousine liberals, those people who want the right education, but they want their children to go to a private school, they want to make sure that the poor are heard and the unions are protected, but they're not having a union in their own company and they're working on Wall Street making $200 million a year. But they're liberal and they're democratic and they go to dinners with Bill Clinton and yeah. Yeah, my God. Okay, that answers that. Let's go to another one before we go to our guest.
Okay. Lance Armstrong's been in the news very recently. His friends, I think, have been testifying about drug use. Lance Armstrong's been one of the most respected athletic icons in America, but it's looking like he might be shown to be cheating. Could you give your opinion on this? Because you've been an athlete. You've run over 600 races over the last 32 years in just... last week you won a national championship race, but never once have you cheated. And there's a big difference between someone like you with your kind of mindset on athletics and those who do nothing but cheat. So what does that say? What could you say about this in relation to athletes and society as a whole?
You have to look at it as a whole. For example, there was a time when we had Willie Mays and Hank Aaron and Mickey Mantle. They didn't cheat. And Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, Jimmy Fox, they didn't cheat. We had Sam Huff. He didn't cheat. We had people who didn't cheat. Arnold Palmer didn't cheat. We had Jimmy Connors who didn't cheat. We had people in all sports. If they won, it was because of their mastering the unique gifts that they had. And there was a celebrity that came with it, but not a whole lot more than that. So generally you would find an ex-football player, either if they were lucky enough, like Jim Brown, to get into some movies, but if they weren't, maybe they'd end up having a car dealership or maybe working as a maitre d' because people would know them. There wasn't a lot of capital behind their name. And there weren't an enormous amount of endorsements. Then came a few firms that were the big money firms. Now, these were firms that nurtured athletes. They would get them in 6 and 7 years of age. And they would put a lot of money behind them and a lot of coaching behind them. So they had an enormous advantage over someone who just wanted to go out and compete. And that began the whole commodification of sports. So today it's not do you have a good athlete, it's do you have the most expensive athlete. Does that mean the most expensive athlete is the best athlete? No, but you buy yourself a victory. So George Steinbrenner, who I believe did more to destroy the integrity of baseball than any human being, yet he was glorified for his having the checkbook and his rapacious personality. In point of fact, he would buy the best people on all the other teams he could get so he would have one superstar team. Well, that's not competition. That's monopoly. And yet that's where our mindset was. But that's what people wanted to see. And is someone worth, you know, every time they go to bat, giving him $50,000? Because that's what some make, whether they strike out or hit a ball. So then when the people are paid astronomical salaries and they don't succeed, they have a, let's say, a slump, then the crowd boos them. You're being paid too much not to do better, as if the only only criteria for performance is how well you're paid. But the endorsements are so profitable, not directly to the athlete, but first to the agency that takes a 40% cut because they own you. So they get how many tournaments you're going to be in. They're the ones behind Tiger Woods. They're the ones behind Michael Jordan. Now, if you're at the top of your game, they will get you a lot of endorsements. So now we want to go out and buy a hot dog because Michael Jordan ate it, or some Fruit of Loom boxer shorts because Tiger Woods endorsed it. What in the world does endorsing underwear have to do with me buying it because someone else who's famous as an athlete told me to buy it? It is that connection that people have, which is a very warped connection. So what this leaves out of it is now today people are so terrified, individually, the athletes, that they can't compete, they have to cheat. So we're seeing an enormous amount of athletes, the dominant number of athletes, cheating. And they're cheating because the others, how the others get ahead. And when you win, you get the endorsements and you get the money. If you don't win, you're forgotten and someone takes your place. So now there's the incentive to cheat. As the man said on 60 Minutes last night, who testified before grand jury, mind you, he's kept silent all these years, but he was doping. According to him, he was actually getting the dope to Lance Armstrong. And Armstrong, according to two of his buddies who helped win in the postal team, all of them were being encouraged by their coaches to cheat, the doctors to cheat. They were all cheating. Everyone else in cycling was cheating. It was nothing but cheating. So then if everybody was cheating, then who's got the newest cheat sheet to get the best cheat? So if everybody if everybody's got answers to the test and you can only accept 100 grade, how does someone else get to 101 on a 100-point test? It's non-sustainable. It has its own flaws built in. It is inevitable it will fail. So now that it's starting to unravel, based upon what I'm projecting may happen, it may not, at some point during this, Lance Armstrong will be indicted. And just like the former Olympian sprinter who had to come forward, acknowledge she cheated, took the drugs, and went to prison, the same could be done for Lance Armstrong. If that happens, then that will unravel the rest of the cord. And if Lance Armstrong has to plead guilty, it will be with the condition he tells everything. That means all the other people on the team, the coaches, the sponsors, all the other athletes around the world, everything comes apart, just like Barry Bonds. So all of sport today is based upon cheat, enhancement, excessive egos, hot dogging, grandstanding, posturing, and what's left out of all this is just the love of the sport and the love of the fan who loves the sport. So that's where we're at today. So the Lance Armstrongs of the world, the Barry Bonds, who everybody would believe was such a great hitter, the Mark McGuire's, oh, great hitter, Sammy Sosa, all of their records should be stripped. There shouldn't be a record with an asterisk. There should be no records. And you should do it right. You should be able to test people, and if they fail a test, they're banned from the sport for life. All right? Right. And then go one step further. They're not only banned for the sport, but they have to engage in community support by being a coach of a little league team for the next 10 years. See how that fits them. But as long as the people are willing to go to the stadiums and suspend belief that this person is doing what they're doing on their own, which a few are, but the majority aren't, and how we select these people based upon how it's an artificial construction, that this person is the best because they've got the best agent, they've got the best PR, and they've got the best marketing, instead of allowing an open market where everyone has a chance to compete equally. Because right now, everything is predetermined who's going to win. And it's predetermined because of how we get the... We're doing what the Russians do. We get the kids young, and then we train them, whether it's in ballet or the piano. That's what the Chinese used to do, even during Mao Zedong. They would take a kid as young as 4 away from his family, put him in special schools, and for 10 hours a day they would train them. Also at 16, this person was winning competitions around the world and considered a new a genius, a new savant. No, you would be able to do the same if you had no life except to perform for the state. So today, they don't perform for the state. They perform for the profits and what comes with it. That somehow the illusion that this is a better human being because they're good at their sport. We used to have people who were good at their sport and good human beings. Today, that is a rarity. Hope that answers the question.
Thank you very much.
I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to take a music break, come back, and then start with our guest. Our guest today, our first guest, is James Pugh. And James is going to talk about how one very important act, the Clean Air Act, has been taken away from us, or is attempted to take away and water it down and change it. And what can we do about it? Who's behind this? And why haven't the Democrats done anything to stop this?
Show is produced in our New York City studio. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. The chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Jason Taubenfeld.